The book is called Judgment at Appomattox. Craig, what do you think that's about?
Well, I'm guessing Civil War battle.
There you go. Right. That's the only time you ever hear the name Appomattox.
That's right.
Really,
I mean, yeah.
Tied into that to the end of the Civil War. It is a historic Civil War novel written by Ralph Peters, news analyst for Fox, also retired from the Army, and he's done a number of these. And because this is the end, Ralph, does this mean this is your last book about the Civil War? Have you reached the culmination of your work?
Well, it may be the culmination of my work, but I am doing one more prequel on the Battle of Chancellorsville so I can address Stonewall Jackson, who was a very complex figure. But Judgment at Appomattox, really, it's about the last incredibly brutal 2 weeks of the Civil War when Lee is trying to preserve his army. Grant is chasing him across southern Virginia. And there's fighting every day, skirmishes, battles, and these men, these complex and fascinating leaders and soldiers on both sides are under such duress that you really see, you get a sense of the richness of our past, I think. But it's technically a novel because I'm trying to delve into their inner lives, but I prefer to call it narrative history. This is Judgment at Appomattox is very, very historically accurate. And to me, it's a way that people can learn the reality of our Civil War as opposed to the superficial fantasies we get from the political extremes.
For those who may not be familiar with the battle, Ralph, can you tell us what led up to it?
Yes. In late March of 1865, Grant and his armies, and they are armies, plural, have Lee surrounded, or virtually surrounded, at Petersburg and Richmond front. Lee tries one desperate attack at Fort Stedman, very dramatic. It fails. Petersburg's defenses are pierced shortly thereafter. Lee manages, just slips out with the remnants of his army. He's running to join another Confederate army in North Carolina. Grant and Meade are chasing him. And again, it's fighting every single day. The Confederates are there's no food left. They can't, you know, they're scrounging whatever they can eat. They're sick. They're impoverished. People are deserting, but the hardcore stays by Lee. And their loyalty at this point is really to Lee rather than the Confederacy. I mean, he's the one they trust. And on the other hand, you have this magnificently equipped Union Army, the first real modern army, chasing them. And across a two-week period, it gets you to Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, where the Confederates are truly surrounded now. They make a last desperate breakout attempt. It fails, and Lee is forced to surrender. So, you know, everybody knows how it ends, but what they don't know is the brutality and the savagery of the fighting to get there, and also nobility mixed in, too. And so, again, with the Civil War back in the headlines, what stuns me is how people utterly misunderstand it. They, no pun intended, they paint it as just black and white. You're either a hero or a villain. And the men who fought that war on both sides were really complex, rich characters making anguished decisions. For instance, the Southern generals we know, the names Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Jubal Early, many another, West Point trained officers, they were against secession. But when secession came, they felt they had to go with their states and their families and their neighbors. They couldn't fight against them. Some of the Southerners did go with the North. Some Northerners, like General Pemberton from Philadelphia, went to the Confederacy. And so while slavery was the catalyst of that war, people weren't all fighting for slavery. Poor Southern whites, who made up most of the infantry in the Confederate armies, they had no slaves. They, in their view, they were fighting for their home. So I'm a Yankee born and bred, but when I look at it, I've got to try to judge things, to see things through the eyes of the people of the times, not through our politically correct lenses. But what were those men and women, North and South, what did they believe in? What were they fighting for? And so I'm trying to give people an entertaining, exciting way to learn the facts about our history. So the next time somebody at a party starts shooting off their mouth about, oh, this or that, you can turn some facts on them.
We're talking today with Ralph Peters. The book is called Judgment at Appomattox. Is it just sort of fortuitous timing, the way your book's coming out and the fact that sort of Robert E. Lee is back in the headlines, albeit as, you know, a monument or at least is what he represents?
Well, whether or not it's fortuitous for the book, it's not for the country, because this is the debate over the statues. And again, I'm a Yankee. I lost a Civil War ancestor wearing Union blue. Taking the Civil War into the year of our Lord 2017 and using it as a political club is grossly unfair. And when you want to take down statues, I would say this to people. First of all, beware rewriting or erasing history. But second, which statue do you mean? You want to take down statues of Jefferson Davis, President of the Confederacy, an adamant believer in slavery, a traitor? Take them down. I'm all for it. But what about Stonewall Jackson, who opposed secession? Now, Stonewall Jackson is not in the new book, Judgment at Appomattox. I'm working on a book about him right now, though, because he had died mid-war. But Stonewall Jackson, when he was just Thomas Jonathan Jackson before the war in Lexington, Virginia, against great local opposition, he opened a Sunday school for free blacks and slaves. It was a roaring success. The black community just loved this guy. He broke Virginia law to teach blacks to read. And there were slave sales in Lexington, Virginia. And one young male begged Jackson, please buy me, please buy me. And Jackson didn't want to buy slaves. But he bought the guy to save him from being sold south, away from his friends and family. And as soon as the deal was done, Jackson turned him loose to make his living and just pay back the debt to Jackson and become a free man. The black population, free, black, and slave in Lexington, Virginia, and Rockbridge County, just adored Jackson. But you don't hear any of that in the screaming matches and the headlines. So what all these books I've done in the Civil War, from King at Gettysburg to Judgment at Appomattox, I'm trying to, in a readily digestible and exciting way, teach people the facts of our incredibly rich, dramatic, and still relevant history.
We're talking this morning with Ralph Peters, author of the Civil War novels that we've been interviewing over a number of years now. This latest one is called Judgment at Appomattox. Of course, you retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. Can you give your thoughts a little bit on this current military situation, North Korea really in the headlines with possible nuclear weapons and what that threat is? What do we need to know currently, and what can we sort of gain from our past Cold War thoughts and all the sort of the bomb is coming type of thoughts to deal with the situation today?
Well, the difference between this and the Cold War is the Soviet Union, while rabidly ideological in the early Cold War, later on the ideology pales, it just becomes corrupt, but it was led by rational actors who didn't want to be destroyed themselves, who had a pretty good grip on how the world works. There were veterans of World War II on both sides. They knew how terrible war was. I beg your pardon. Kim Jong-un, the madcap young leader of North Korea, he's never been in any military. He likes military parades. He doesn't know what war is. He probably doesn't have a good sense of how weak he really is and how strong we are, because his generals are afraid to tell him that he doesn't want bad news. He kills people. He killed his own brother. So we're dealing now with somebody who does not appear to be psychologically reliable, and he keeps threatening to kill Americans, to attack the United States with nuclear weapons. He threatens it again and again and again. He is developing the means, the missiles and the warheads, to attack the United States with nukes. And I'm tired of Washington saying, oh, he doesn't really mean it. Oh, he doesn't really. Well, wait a minute. How many dead Americans will it take before we recognize that this guy is a serious threat? For 25 years, he's been developing his nuclear program, and we've talked negotiations, or China's going to help us, or this or that, and nothing has worked. He is now very close to being able to attack the United States. And I'll tell you, I hope, I pray, that some miraculous way will be found to defang his nuclear program. But the way it looks now, and I hate this, But it looks like it will probably require extensive military action on our part to protect Americans. And you've got to remember that, you know, the reason we have a government isn't to send out Social Security payments or anything else. The reason we have a government is to protect, the justification for our government is to protect our citizens and territory. And we have to do that. It is morally and ethically correct to protect our people.
Well, we appreciate that insight into the current situation. Of course, looking back at history is what you do quite well. The Judgment at Appomattox, Ralph Peters, our guest this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it. Well, thank you for having me on.
Thanks.